Hey, VBackLink family, it's Lily, and I was wondering if I could ask you a really quick favor. If the VBackLink has ever helped you, encouraged you, or taught you something along your birth after cesarean journey, I would be so grateful if you would vote for us for Best Podcast in NoCo Style's Best of NoCo Awards. As a Northern Colorado born and raised mama myself, this is especially meaningful for me. It takes less than a minute to vote, and we've linked it right in the show notes. Every vote helps more families discover the VBackLink, bringing more awareness to VBack education and support. Thank you so much for cheering on our little team. We appreciate you more than you know. So go to the show notes, click the link to vote, and then come back to this episode for another incredible episode. Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength. My name is Lily. I am your co-host, and welcome to the VBackLink. And I say co-host if this is your first time listening and you're like, there's just the one lady though. You do have a co-host. Her name is Paige. She's not with us this evening. If you don't know, Paige actually lives in Korea. She's a military spouse and she is currently stateside with her family. And so I am actually hot off of hanging out with Paige for the first time in real life, which is so amazing. We got to do a little VBackLink retreat with our co-founders, Megan and Julie, our admin, Ashley, who writes all the beautiful emails that you get. And then Paige and I got to meet in real life. And honestly, y'all should see those pictures. They are so funny. We're like cupping each other's faces like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're real. It was seriously to die for. Some of us have met in person. Obviously, Megan and Julie know each other, our founders. And Julie, one of our founders, actually flew to Korea and photographed Paige's MAC. So they had met, but I have never met Julie or Megan or Paige or Ashley. And most of us had never met in real life. And it was just a real, real special time. But needless to say, I asked Paige on our retreat if I could take this episode myself so that she could just have space to be with her family and not worry about packing a microphone or like having to find a quiet space at her in-laws' house to record. So it's just me this evening, but I am so excited for you all to hear this story. Paige actually read Hannah's story and invited her to be on the podcast. And I also read her submission and was just so touched by it. I do want to give a trigger warning that this episode is going to talk about cancer and an infant cancer diagnosis, but it is truly incredible the way that Hannah holds her story. And I love in her submission, she talked about how all of the prep that she did for her VBAC really lended to how she was able to handle this really hard diagnosis for her daughter at 7 weeks old. So I can't wait for you to hear her story. I don't even have a review of the week for you. I'm going to keep this real short and sweet. We are going to do our intro and then we will be back with Hannah. And buckle up because it's a good one. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBackLink podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBackLink is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider. All right, my friends, we are back with Hannah. Hannah, we're so excited to have you. I am going to read a little bit about Hannah and then really hand the floor over to her. Her story really touched both Paige and I when we read her submission. So I'm just really excited to hear from her today. So let me make sure that I get it pulled up. Perfect. Okay. Hannah is a mother and registered nurse living in Southern Maine. When she's not chasing her kids around, cleaning her house, or working, she's doing yoga, spending time outside, and dreaming about art. She is an intuitive woman who has a deep regard for the magnitude of our inner experiences and has often said that pain is my greatest teacher. Wow, I feel like that is a great way to kick this off. So Hannah, welcome to the VBackLink. I'm going to hand the floor over to you. Tell us your story.
Sure, yeah. Well, first I just want to say, Lily, it is such a privilege to be able to be on here and tell my story. The way that you and Paige and your hosts prior honor women's birth stories is just so beautiful. And it's an incredibly powerful and potent service that you all provide. It was so inspirational and hopeful for my own VBAC, and I still listen every week. So it's so cool to be here now.
Oh, that's so special. Well, we're just honored to like get to be a tiny piece of people's stories, and then to hear them back is just the best. So thank you. That's so kind.
And before I get started into my birth stories, I really just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge my own lineage of birth stories, my mom's, my aunt's, my mother-in-law's, my grandmother's, all these journeys into motherhood that have shaped me consciously, and if not consciously, then in my cells. And I just also want to acknowledge all the people who have helped me through my births and postpartum. I've had a wild ride, and I've been dealt a tough card, hand of cards. And there's just been a lot of people who prayed for me and my family, who provided a service, sent us money, or who have just been there deeply with us in the thick of it. And I just wanted to give a little heart and love to them before I really get into this. So yeah, every VBAC story starts with a C-section. This is another cool thing. So, you know, this podcast is going to air in, this episode is going to air in August, and it was actually 4 years ago on Father's Day, which today is a Father's Day, that I found out I was pregnant with my son. So that was Father's Day 2022. I found out that I was pregnant, and my husband and I were so excited. We had been trying for quite a while, like 10-ish months under that year mark, but definitely approaching it to the point where, like, you know, just starting to feel like, hey, is this going to happen to me? Getting a little anxiety about it. But yeah, I was pregnant, and I had a pretty like uneventful and, you know, normal pregnancy with my son. We did not find out the gender, so both of my pregnancies were surprise gender babies. And I really had no like prenatal pregnancy complications or anything, no issues while being pregnant. It wasn't like a breeze, but nothing more complicated. And so I went with a group of hospital midwives that had done a lot of my GYN care prior to being pregnant, just because I knew them, I felt comfortable, and I always thought, oh, if I get pregnant, like, I'll have my, you know, my baby with you. And then there was one midwife I really, really liked in particular, who I still think is, yeah, just a badass. She's great. So went with them for my, you know, for my prenatal and labor delivery care. And approaching the end of my pregnancy, around like 39 weeks and like 6 days, like just about 40 weeks, I went in for just a regular appointment. And at that point I was like, just, you know, so pregnant and wanted to be checked. And I guess I should back up a little bit, because this is important for me to say and own, is that like, while my pregnancy was pretty easy, I didn't do a lot of like labor and delivery, like prep. I didn't take a class or anything. And I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, to be honest. And it was kind of at that COVID times still. So I didn't really know about classes that were being offered or any like birth education. I had read like what to expect when you're expecting, but that's about it. And one of the midwives along the way had like asked me if I was going to do a birth class. And I think I could have been like easily swayed if there was like kind of some like, you know, like you should really prepare for this. But a friend of mine had given birth recently, and she had just kind of like won it and it like went great. And another friend of mine, like kind of a similar story. And so I was just like, all right, I think I'll just like wing it. The hospital's not offering anything, like whatever. So uneventful pregnancy, getting towards the end, go in for like my regular, you know, at that point, weekly checkup. And, you know, I asked to be checked because I'm curious at this point. I had been working 36 hours a week as an RN doing bedside nursing at a rehab hospital that was like, the patients were high acuity, the patient load was really like high. So basically, like, I was on my feet for like 12 hours. And so I had done, like, I was just like walking and like waddling everywhere at this point. So I was just like curious, like, where I'd be at. I at least gather that like walking can help with dilation. Anyway, so I go into this appointment and it's with one of the midwives who I hadn't really connected very well with. We had kind of had like a weird, at least for me, a weird interaction where like she had asked me. So there were like multiple midwives in this practice. There were like three midwives. And then like they had hired on a fourth one kind of towards the end of my pregnancy who I met like one time. She was kind of like onboarding and shadowing. But this one who I was meeting with at this one, this particular appointment, previously she had asked me like, is there anything that you're, you know, like that you're afraid of for like giving birth? And I was just like, oof. I was like, you know what? I really just don't want to have a C-section. And her body kind of tensed up and she got kind of like kind of weird, like there's just this weird look on her face. And she was like, well, you know, I've had two C-sections and you do what you have to do in the moment. And then you grieve afterwards and you know, you deal with it then. And I was just kind of like, okay. I was like, I think I just touched a nerve. I think I just like touched something in you.
It's so hard when providers show us their humanity, right? Like in a perfect world, they wouldn't bring that into your space at all. And clearly like that was a triggering moment, but that is really tough to hear from your provider.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was just sort of like, ugh, I don't feel very comfortable with you. Anyway, so at my like 40-ish week appointment, if you will, she was there and I told her like, oh, I'd like to be checked. And I was 2 centimeters, which was like super cool. I was like, great. But, you know, I was like, I've been having like Braxton Hicks contractions out the wazoo. And I've been like walking nonstop for the past 9 months. And so then she asked me if I wanted a membrane sweep. And at the time, I didn't know what a membrane sweep was. And I didn't know that it is in itself like kind of a form of induction, even though it's a natural one. And she explained it in a really like simple way to me that was like, basically, like if you're going to go into labor, like this will just kind of speed things along. And if you're not supposed to go into labor, like you won't. And really the only risk, mind you, she didn't tell me about the risk until she was giving me the membrane sweep, is that I could accidentally break your water. But like, I'm not trying to do that. And so I opted for the membrane sweep because having the baby like sounded nice and I was already 2 centimeters. And so I was like, sure, like I'm game. And so she did the membrane sweep and I left that appointment. And that night I just had like all this like energy and I made this like giant lasagna. And we actually have this like super great picture of like me and my husband, my parents came over. I were this like me and my husband, this like giant lasagna that I made. I'm like out to here. Like, and I'm just like grinning like ear to ear, like so stoked. And it was just sort of like, you know, I didn't feel any different, but I felt like, I mean, I felt excited, but in terms of like labor contractions, I didn't feel any different. I woke up around like 3 or 4 or 5 a.m. and I started to feel some contractions. So probably like 12, because my appointment was like pretty late in the afternoon, like I don't know, anywhere between like 12 to 16 hours later. And so I went to the bathroom and there was like the bloody show, like the bloody like mucus. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, this is like happening. So I woke my husband up and just told him, just gave him an update. This is what's going on. He's like, are you going to call the midwives? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. I was like kind of walking around our house, which is funny because we have an extremely tiny house. So it's just like one like always just like pacing back and forth. He's like, you got to call them and tell them what's going on. I was like, I don't know. They gave me all this like wishy-washy information. Like, don't call if it's like too, you know, whatever, too late, too early, this kind of thing. Like, I don't know if I should call. And so a little bit of time passes and the sensation is ramping up. And so I give them a call and I have this like note on my phone of all these like things I'm experiencing. And I feel like all like armed and empowered. Like, this is why I should come into the hospital. And the midwife on call is just like, do you want to come in? I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. And so we get all of our stuff ready. And I have this really great memory of like bending over to like turn out a light in our I'm in our bedroom and my like water starts to break and it's like so cool, so exciting. And it's a pretty big gush. It's not like a ton, but it's like enough where I'm like, my water's breaking. Okay, like we gotta go. So we get in the car and we drive there. It's about a half hour away. And we get there and they hook me up to the monitors and are like, great, you're having contractions like every 2 to 3 minutes. This is awesome. Like they like swabbed me for the amniotic fluid. It was positive. They're like, yep, that's your water. You're having all these contractions. Do you want to be checked? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, the check was so painful yesterday. Like, I don't know if I want to like have that again. And they were like, okay, well, we think we're going to admit you anyway. And so I just end up going to a room and eventually the midwife comes and it was so that, like now the new midwife on call was the midwife who gave me the membrane sweep yesterday and is also the midwife that I don't feel super comfortable with. Yeah. So a little bit of a bummer. And I remember consciously being like, oof, this is like not what I want, but this is the situation. And so I have to like work with it. And so, you know, we're in the room. My nurse is really cool. I have my mom come. And I just start to like float into like labor land. Like things are just getting like a little bit more like intense. I'm like more focused on my contractions. Mind you, again, I didn't really like prepare for anything. So I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. So I'm like, literally, I asked for a mat and I'm like laying like on my side on a mat, like on the floor in the hospital room. And I'm like, can you give me a ball too? Cause like maybe leaning on the ball will feel good. And midwife comes and she checks me in 4 centimeters. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, all I'm getting is like positive feedback from people. Like you're doing great. And so, you know, I'm kind of just in it. I'm just becoming more and more focused on my contractions and it starts to get pretty intense. I start to feel like really close to each other. Like I'm not getting any kind of a break. And that starts to become really confusing to me. Cause I'm like, well, what I read in the book was like, there should be a little bit of like space in between them. And so coping just becomes harder. I'm pretty much just like on the floor holding my husband's hand, like try my best to breathe, but I haven't really practiced or prepared in any kind of a way. And so the nurse comes over to me and she's just like, do you want to get in the tub? Do you want to get into the tub? I'm like, yeah, the tub sounds great. So she like fills the tub. And I remember having this like moment where I'm like, I kind of have to pee. Should I go to the toilet? Should I get in the tub? And I'm kind of like waffling back and forth. And I'm like, I'm just going to get in the tub. I get in the tub and it feels great. I have to pee, but I'm like nervous to pee in front of people I don't know. So I'm like not going to the bathroom, which again, at the time I didn't know was sort of like, you want to be going to the bathroom when you're in labor. And then the midwife comes in and she's just like, oh, she's like, you're in the tub. And she gets this like kind of like she's annoyed with me or like frustrated with me or frustrated with the staff, like sort of like, you're in the tub. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, it feels great. I feel like I can like do labor. And she's like, we really don't like it when like people get in the tub before 6 centimeters. Like that, this is why we keep it in our back pocket, like for last. And I'm like, oh, come on. Like I'm getting like pain relief here. Yeah. It did not feel good. It was taking me away from my labor, like focus. I gotta like be on my best behavior now for like everybody like in the room here, the midwife, the nurse, my mom, like all the like, I'm like, like it's just becoming a little too much. And the sensation of everything is so strong, it's hard to communicate anyway. So I get out of the tub and I labor a little longer on the floor and with the ball. And finally the nurse is like, Do you want to talk about like pain meds, medication management? I'm like, sure. And so I get a shot of Nubain and that feels really great. Really takes the edge off. And I kind of feel like I'm drunk. I remember that, this like feeling of like I'm drunk. And then it starts to wear off. Oof, it starts to wear off and I don't have a plan for what's next. And I'm only like 5, 5.5 centimeters at that point. And I'm like thinking I should have had a baby by now, like based on how everything like was going, like, again, just no sort of education or kind of like concept or understanding of how like labor like works unfolds. And so when the nubane wears off, I can't really cope with the return of the contractions. And so I just hit the like call button on the bed and I'm like, I need the epidural. The midwife comes like running in here, and I'll give credit where credit is due. She has a really like, she says something really nice to me in this moment, which is like, okay, like this is not what you wanted and it's a change of plans, but you'll get pain relief and you'll dilate in bed and we'll have your baby and your husband can catch your baby like right here in bed. Like, that's fine. And I like, I'm like, okay, I'm like, I'm good. Like good. Like we're all on the same page here. I'm feeling okay. And so they place the epidural. It's like, it's working great. It's actually feeling like a little too strong by my memory. You know, that kind of bothers me. I'm like, oh, I can't feel my legs. Ugh. But it's also like I wanted pain relief, so whatever. Things really start to like kind of take a turn for the worse, if you will, at this point. So I get the epidural. I get a little bit of relief. My labor slows. And the midwife starts talking about Pitocin. And I'm kind of like declining it and... Not kind of. I'm declining it. And I'm like, can we just see, like, give me a little bit more time just to see if my body relaxes, right? Because, like, I wish this was my story, that, like, my body would just, like, relax with the epidural and, like, things would just, like, open right up. But that's not my story. It's not how my body works. And so I think a couple hours pass. And so, like, I finally, like, agree for the Pitocin. And so they're like getting ready to hang the bag, but my son starts to go tachycardic on the readers. And so the nurses are coming in and flipping me on my side. And it's actually all starting to really remind me of my L&D semester when I was in nursing school. Like everything that they were like kind of saying and doing, I was like, oh my God, I've like read this in a book or like worked this like scenario before. They like flip me on my left side, leave, come running back in. Baby doesn't like this position. Flip me to my right. I'm there for a couple minutes, run back in. Baby doesn't like this position. At this point, there's been this like back and forth of that so many times that there's a part of me that knows where this is going. Cause I'm like, man, this is like at least three flips now where they're like, baby doesn't like this position. And I didn't know this, but my husband, who was kind of watching the monitors at the time, was like, yeah, his heart rate was climbing and it hit the 180s and it just kind of stayed there and it wasn't coming back down to that normal range. And so the midwife comes in and I, at this point, like I said, like a part of me knows what's coming. And she's like, I think that we need to go to a C-section. Like, I know this isn't what you want, but your baby's heart rate is too high. It's not coming down. We need to do a C-section. So I like really quickly sign all these papers for all kinds of things, the C-section, a blood transfusion, all kinds of measures to save my life, which like at the time felt, I was like, oh my God, like I was just like in bed trying to relax. This is all of a sudden starting to get really intense. And they wheel me away right away to the operating room. And I just remember getting on the OR table, being placed on the OR table and being like, I cannot believe that this is the end to my pregnancy. And I just felt very out of my body. And the C-section itself was, I think, pretty like unremarkable, pretty standard. There was a lot of like, they brought my husband in, which was great. There was also just kind of a lot of like background like chatter, a lot of people talking about other things. And you know, they cut me open and got my son out. My husband was like super out of it and overwhelmed and, you know, disoriented by the whole thing too. And they were like, what gender's the baby, dad? And he was like, oh, a boy. And, you know, that's when we found out that we had a son. But it was just all in all like a pretty unexpected and traumatic experience. And I never quite reached a lot of resolution about like why this happened. There was a lot of talk about like my placenta having an infection, but like I didn't have a fever, so I couldn't be diagnosed with chorio. Yeah, there was just like a lot of kind of a lot of question marks. And so in the past like few years, I've just kind of had to learn to like sit with that. My son, when he came out, was totally perfectly healthy. Great Apgar scores, 8 pounds, 15.9 ounces, basically 9 pounds. And I breastfed him, which was really great. A nurse there in like the middle of the night, like had me start on a nipple guard. And so I was sort of like using the nipple guard for a little bit. It really wasn't necessary. And my mother-in-law helped me get off of the nipple guard, which was great. And so we had some women breastfeed for years. I had breastfed for 10 months, but I felt very, very proud of that. And just like kind of had to sit with a lot of grief and trauma over the C-section for a long time. And like I said, there's still question marks there that it's just sort of learning through time to accept. And postpartum was just really hard with all of that, with the grief, with the not knowing, with the confusion, feeling very alone in having a C-section, even though it's unfortunately becoming more and more common for women. And yeah, just a lot of postpartum anxiety. I'd had a panic attack around 6 weeks postpartum, which I had never like truly experienced a panic attack before. That was awful. And it took me like about a year to really start to like kind of heal some of those wounds. And it's hard, you know, becoming a parent is so monumental, such a huge transition. And you know, you pair that with a traumatic birth experience, whatever that birth experience is, and it is a recipe for a really difficult time. And it was isolating and lonely. It was just a really isolating and lonely time.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula.
And I want to say, yeah, somewhere around that year mark was when I really started to immerse myself in the idea of the VBAC and kind of read my big redo, I guess, if you will. And I wasn't even planning on getting pregnant like a year postpartum, but that's kind of how the cookie crumbled. I think my son was like 13 months, almost 14 months, maybe. I get this really weird pregnancy symptom, which if anybody else has experienced this, I would love to hear from you. But when I'm pregnant, when like hot air or like hot water touches my face, my sinuses hurt. And so I was taking a shower. My period was due. I was one day late. I was like, okay, like one day, no biggie. Like that can happen. Water hit my face and my sinuses like immediately just like tensed up, started hurting, all this like pressure. And I was like, wow, I think I'm pregnant. So took a test, it confirmed, and honestly, like, I was really scared. My husband was, like, super stoked. I was, like, really, really nervous about it because it just kind of reopened this, like, wound that I was kind of slowly starting to close and just a much quicker timeline. So found out I was pregnant, had started just sort of my like naturally started all this like re-education on birth and prepping for the next birth, but here it was coming much sooner. And I took my time. I really took to heart two things that I agree to believe to be true, which is that in birth, you can only control two things: who you birth with, like who's at your birth, and what setting you're giving birth in. And so I took some time to like just kind of really get clear about what I wanted this birth to be like. And I knew I didn't want to go back to the people that I had birthed before. And those midwives were like, we don't do VBACs anyway. Like, they told me that when I was leaving the hospital. So I was like, well, they're not an option. And I don't really want to go back to that hospital anyway because of the, like, memory trauma. And my family doctor, like, she delivers babies at the other big hospital in town, but she can't deliver VBACs. So I could kind of go to, like, an OBGYN practice. But I think what honestly is more in line with, like, my heart and my spirit is home birth. And so that decision was an easy decision to came to, but it did take some time. And I interviewed different home birth midwives in the area. And I'll never forget this. There was one group that I did not get good vibes from, but one of their midwives said something really important to me. And it was sort of like God talking through somebody else to me, a really important message, which is about a home birth and a hospital transfer. And she said, sometimes a hospital transfer protects having a vaginal birth if that's your goal. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, yes. I was like, that's the nuance in this. Like, yep, I love that. That's like, that's a truth that I got to look at and like open my heart up to. So I ended up going with a different, not those people, but I had interviewed a few groups. And so I went with a group here, Southern Maine, called Sokopi Midwives. They're great. They're a group of four home birth midwives. And it was just an awesome setup. 1 hour long prenatal appointments, a lot of getting to know each other, a lot of trust, a lot of previous birth processing. And I could say sort of all my like really intense stuff to them about like wanting a VBAC and, you know, feeling like my like right to motherhood was like stolen from me by having a C-section. And they could really sit with me with that, not shut it down, not dismiss it. And they kind of just really reminded me that like I'm not alone in feeling that way about my first birth. So we went with them, and I also started to go to a chiropractor. So if you're in Southern Maine or even like New Hampshire, Dr. Rebecca of North Sky Chiro, she's amazing. You want her on your birth team. She was also just somebody who could really sit with me and be with me and provide really amazing body work and adjustments. And God, I went and saw her every week during my pregnancy from the very beginning. And I got a doula. There's a really great program here also in Maine called Community Doulas. And they believe that every woman who wants a doula at their birth should have one. And so you can kind of get a doula on a sliding scale fee range. It was really, really nice. Can make it like much more affordable. And so I got a doula through them. So I felt really great about my birth team. And instead of having, you know, a baby shower, I had a mother's blessing ceremony, and I had like my closest friends, my mom, my mother-in-law, a cousin of mine, all at it. And it was really beautiful. It's right at the beginning of my third trimester. And then I was just sort of like waiting. My due date was Christmas. And so I felt very much so like, okay, like this is like deeply like spiritual for me. I love God. I feel very close to God. I feel close to Christianity. And so I felt like I was just kind of getting all these like signs and symbols about like this baby and this VBAC. And so I had a very like low intervention pregnancy. I didn't do any genetic testing. I hadn't done that with my son. And in the state of Maine, kind of the only requirement for a home birth VBAC is that you have one ultrasound that confirms the placement of the placenta. So I did that. I didn't even have like a full 20 week scan. And so I just felt very much so this like trust, like this leap of faith and this trust in my body. And so, you know, the minimal testing I did, everything checked out good. And come December, you know, I felt very ready to give birth. I felt like in my heart, I felt so prepared. I had done Christian hypnobirthing. I was like listening to those tracks all the time on repeat, falling asleep to them. Just, I felt so mentally strong. And I was, you know, I was talking about what I was doing with everybody too, and just like surrounded by so many supportive women, friends, family, colleagues, just like everybody I felt was like cheering me on. And it was such an incredible feeling to be like so, so determined. And I had made, I guess, a kind of, I don't know, like intense or radical is the right word, but kind of a choice to like let go of people who didn't believe in me. That's not the right way to put it, but people who kind of had doubt or were encouraging me to hold space for doubt, which I understand sort of like this, we don't want you to get let down. Like you're so focused on this. If it doesn't work out, we don't want you to be let down. But I really had to like shut all of that out, especially as I was in the last like month of my pregnancy. I was like, all any doubt has to leave. Anybody who is doubting this, I can't have around. And so I felt emboldened and prepared and ready. And on December 23rd, I woke up kind of around a similar time as I had with my son. And I felt contractions. I was like, these are gas pains or these are contractions? And just very quickly, my body revealed to myself that these were contractions. And so it was slow. It was very slow. And Lily, I can actually relate a lot to you. I've listened to your birth story on here about like a very like long labor. I kind of had this intuitive feeling inside myself, like this is going to be a long labor. And yep, like 100%. Like I was like 10 hours shorter than you, but still long. Yeah. And so I was having like one contraction every 10 minutes and it was totally manageable. But I was like, okay, this is what's happening. And so I had my parents come pick up my son, packed him an overnight bag. I was like, just in case this turns into the real deal, like he's going to be with you guys. My husband and I were home for the day. We kind of just got the house ready, got the birth tub all set up. I had a birth altar. I took a shower. We had sex. Like it was just very like, kind of like, okay, we are getting ready for this. And I had let my birth team know like what was going on from the very beginning. You know, I don't need you guys here, but I think that like, I think this is labor. And I was kind of expecting it to pick up. I had let the midwives and my doula know. And then, in the morning time around like 10-ish, 10 a.m. And then by 5 p.m., everyone was checking back in with me. And I'm like, I don't know, man, I'm still getting these contractions, but they're like one every like 10 minutes. And so I asked about prodromal labor. I was like, what's that? Like, could that be like what I'm experiencing? And they were like, yeah, like maybe like, we don't know. Like it will reveal itself, you know, it will like time will tell. And it was shortly after that, like an hour or so, that things started to ramp up. So even though I had just told everybody like, hey, things are like staying the same, call everybody back up. I'm like, stuff's ramping up. And they're like, do you want us to come over, get set up? And I was a little like, I really don't know. Like, I didn't want to have this like watched pot feeling, but I also really wanted to be witnessed by women and held by women during this birth. I really like, I just like my soul craved that. And so as things ramped up, I was like, okay, why don't you come over? They're like, we'll just get set up. We don't have to do anything, but we'll just be there. So they come over and my doula comes over and the midwives get set up and my doula, she like just immediately gets to work. She's also a massage therapist. So she was like, great, hands on. Yeah, doing all kinds of things on like the hip squeezes, but like my neck and head too. Like it really felt amazing. She really did a lot for me. And I'm laying in the sideline position. I'm doing the Miles circuit. I'm bouncing on the ball. I'm doing everything. The contractions are getting a lot closer together. And around 3 a.m., one of the midwives, Grace, is like, we should do a check. And so around 3, I'm 3 centimeters. And I'm a little like let down, like all like that whole day only to be 3. And they were like, don't worry, the first 6 are like the hardest, like you're doing great. And so I just keep doing, I just like keep focusing on it. And more time passes. And I'm on the toilet. And I'm on the ball, I'm doing lunges, I'm doing everything. And around 10 a.m., she checks me again. And she has just this like big smile on her face. And she's like, you've made so much progress. And I'm 6.5 centimeters. And it was just so wonderful because that was further than I had made with my son. And my husband and I just like held each other and cried. And they're like, you want us to get the tub ready? And I'm like, yes, let's get the tub ready. So we go and I go into the tub and just have some really great time in there. It kind of takes the edge off of contractions, but they're like really intense at this point and happening all the time. And I'm in the tub and my husband's playing his guitar and like everybody in the room is just like crying, like all the like the doula, the midwives, like it's just kind of really like really beautiful. Like again, like they know how important this is to me. And it's like I've really given all this my all this birth prep my all. So I get out of the tub, do some other stuff, more time on the toilet. I really love being on the toilet and I was so good about going to the bathroom like all the time, peeing all the time. And geez, around like sometime in the afternoon, I'm like 7.5, 8 centimeters. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is like, this baby's coming here. It's Christmas Eve. Like this is so beautiful. And at 5 p.m., I'm 9 centimeters. So I'm thinking baby any minute here. And I start to get kind of antsy about this. And I really kind of like getting my head around it. I'm like, the baby should be here by now. My water hasn't broken at that point. And at one point I stand up and I feel like I have to pee. And I kind of just like pee slash all this water like comes out onto like one of the chux pads below me in my house. And they check it and it's positive for amniotic fluid. But I'm also like, I think I also just like peed a bunch here too. Anyway, I end up asking for another check. And at that point, the one midwife, Grace, who had been checking me, she's asleep. And so I ask another one to check me. And she's a little like, like we really like it when it's the same person checking the whole time. But she does it. And she's like, oh, you have a little bit of like a cervical lip, but you're like 10 or like you're not cervical lip, but like you have cervix there and I can push it out of the way. And so she's like, you're a 10, you're complete. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I'm kind of like waiting now. I'm like waiting. And I'm like, do I push? Like, what's the deal? And they're like, just wait for your body to do what it's supposed to do. And the contractions are really intense. And mostly, honestly, it feels like this baby is going to like come out my butt. It's like the rectal pressure is just like absolutely insane. I'm like, is this like, is it no to come out like my vagina here? And so nothing is happening. And so I ask her to do another check after about an hour. And she's like, I'm so sorry. It really sucks when this happens, but you're actually still 9 centimeters. There's actually cervix all around. We don't need to like change anything right now, but like we want to make sure that you're still progressing or we will need to talk about a hospital transfer. And so I like really get focus in. My husband and I go into our room. Contractions are so intense. I'm like, I can't do this. I can't do this. One of the midwives comes in. She gets down on me on her like knees and is looking at me. And she's like, the contractions that you're saying no to might be the contraction you need to say yes to like get your baby here. And so I do like the rotisserie, like chicken, all those spinning baby moves. And I'm like screaming yes through all of those. And I guess to make a long story short, it doesn't change anything. I'm still 9 centimeters. So after like being 9 centimeters for about 5 hours at home, we decide to transfer to the hospital. And I was bummed, but I was also like, I'm not going to fight this. Like, it's like, this is going to be what it's supposed to be. And so we go to the hospital and I'm like, definitely like on guard with everybody there. And they like, there's this whole hubbub about paperwork. And I'm like, I'm 9 centimeters. Like, I don't have time to fill out paperwork, like whatever. Yes. My husband's like trying to fill out the paperwork for me. And they're like, no, like your wife really needs to sign this because she's like conscious. So like, whatever. I like get through, I sign the paperwork. And honestly, like once I do sign everything, they're like a lot easier with me. But kind of when I first show up there, first of all, the car ride was like really intense getting there. It's Christmas Eve. My water starts breaking even more. I'm like, great. I'm like going to have a baby in the car now on Christmas Eve. I'm going to have this like car VBAC. But that didn't happen. Get to the hospital. And when I first like change out of my clothes, I want to get into a gown because I'm just like covered in amniotic fluid at that point. There's actually like I don't know if you want to call it like a puddle or like a splash. There's like blood that comes out of me, like an abnormal amount of blood that like comes down and out of me and is sort of like puddled underneath me. And I get really concerned when I see that. And like all the monitors are like thrown on me and they're all like really reassuring. And I look at one of my midwives, because my midwifery team came with me. My husband and my two midwives, my doula, went home. And I just asked Brenda, I was like, Brenda, where did that blood come from? And she's like, that came from you. And I'm like, why? And she's like, I don't know, but I think that you're pushing and you should not push right now because you're not fully dilated. And so the hospital staff is like oddly calm about the whole thing, but I'm kind of like freaking out internally around it, but it never happens again. It's sort of like this one-off thing. It never happens again. So when I'm there, the hospital staff is great. Once I sign this paperwork, they're very hands-off. They're like, your midwives are here. Like, you do your thing. And the anesthesiologist team comes in and is talking about pain relief. And I had really wanted to avoid the epidural, but I was thinking in my head, like, I've been in labor for like 2 days now. I'm 1 centimeter away. I just had this blood come out of me. I don't know what is in store. I don't know what like God has in store for me. A little rest sounds good. And so I have an epidural placed. And again, everyone is like, you might relax and dilate that 1 centimeter that you need to push your baby out. And in my head, I'm like, well, you don't know my body like I do. It's not going to work, but I'm going to get some relief here. So I get a little bit of relief, but I had been like contractions were like so intense at 9 centimeters. I had been like screaming. Like I had tried to go like really like low, but like I like whatever, all that was kind of getting going out the window with this like transfer in the car. So intense, the sensations. And so I had this like really terrible cough go like develop. And so I'm like, I have the epidural placed. I'm like coughing. I'm kind of like, oh, shit, this is like not at all what I wanted, but like here I am, and here I am surrendering to the process, and I'm not alone. Like I have my team here with me. And I've also experienced what I really wanted, which was this long, beautiful home labor being held and witnessed by a group of women who understood what birth was about. And so I was like, okay, that box, like, yes, checked times a million. So epidural, you know, they checked me after that. They're like, you're still 9 centimeters. I mean, I think I was at 9 centimeters, honestly, for like 15 hours. Like it was a long time to kind of be like stuck in one place. And so they're like, do you want Pitocin? And I just greenlit it. I was like, yes, please. And it was not long after that that I was like calling the nurse. And I'm like, there's like a thunderstorm happening inside of me. It's really intense. The epidural's not working. She's like, you want somebody to check you? I'm like, yes, please. And they're like, you're a 10. And I'm like, okay, great. But now I still have to put this baby out. So I kind of reached this place inside of myself where I'm like, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. I've been up for 2 days. This is like, there's just been a lot of like ups and downs in this journey. And so, like I said, the hospital team there was like, they were really good. And there were there was like the resident, and then she left at shift change. And then the hospital midwife, one of the hospital midwives came in to like deliver the baby. My midwifery team was still there again. And both the hospital midwife and the resident had asked me like, what do you want for this birth? And the only thing I told them was, I am not having a C-section. And that just felt like so redemptive for my first birth, where like things were just so out of my control. And I was just like, okay, yes. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm, yeah. And just like, just saying that, like it felt really good. And I'm somebody who has struggled like with voice and with like speaking my truth and saying my needs. And so to be able to do that really like healed some of those old wounds. So I do some, you know, the practice pushing, kind of get ready for it. And then I do it. And then I just push. And I push for like 30-ish minutes. It wasn't that long. And there's just, I'm using the squat bar. They bring a mirror in. And my husband is reading these birth affirmations from my mother's blessing ceremony. Every time I'm pushing, he's just like reading them. And we just had like, he and I had a lot of like really, really like good moments. And I know I'm kind of stepping backwards, but he had said to me when we were at the home, at home laboring, like he had pulled me aside at one point and he just said to me, "Do you know how easy you are to love?" And it just felt like to like have my husband say that to me, like as I'm trying to like labor and birth our baby, was just like phenomenal. And then here we are, like here I am trying to like push her, trying to birth her out. And he's just like reading the affirmations from all of the, you know, my core women, really holding my hand through it all. And again, my like, I'm pretty tired. I'm tired at this point. And I'm like, and I'm also like, I'm not going to believe that this baby is here until I see this baby. And then there's this really nice moment where, again, they have, like, the mirror, and I'm, like, using the squat bar, and, like, I was floored by just how giant your vagina gets when you give birth, like how huge, and, like, the midwife just, like, parted my labia, and I could, like, see my daughter was crowning, could see her, like, face right there, and I wish I had gotten, like, an actual picture of it, but it'll be seared into my memory forever, where I could just see her right there, like, ready to come out, and I was like, okay, I was like, this is really happening now, and on the next push, I just pushed her, and she, like, she came right out and up onto me, and it was so incredible. I just, my husband and I kissed, and then I kissed the baby. And I just remember looking at my husband and being like tears in my eyes, just being like, this heals everything. Like my son's birth has now, like this is now everything has come complete with this cycle. And then it was Christmas morning and I found out that I had had a daughter, and it was just a really, really, really beautiful moment after a very long, long labor.
Oh, wow, Hannah. I just like, I feel like I can picture it in my head. Of all that has unfolded. Wow, how beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And so we had my daughter and named her Elowen Sky. And we had 6 really beautiful weeks with her. And this is the part of the story that things shift again. And basically when she was 7 weeks old, my husband and I found a tumor growing on her head, and I immediately knew that it was not right. She hadn't fallen. There was no reason for a bump on a baby's head. And so I brought it up immediately to my midwifery team, who was still kind of taking care of her, and then also our PCP, our family doctor, who coincidentally, she had an appointment with, like, right away, like, right after the tumor formed itself, or showed, it's revealed itself, showed us, appeared. And we did some imaging. I was, like I said, I was really concerned about this tumor. The medical team kind of initially thought, like, maybe this is just, like, a cyst. And so we did an ultrasound. And I was really worked up about it. But everybody around me was sort of like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I just knew in my bones it was not going to be okay. I was like, this is like, take off my nurse's hat. Like, this is just my mom's intuition here. And so we went and did an ultrasound that was very concerning. The radiologist came in, which is never a good thing when the radiologist comes in to talk to you after imaging. And he was just like, I'm going to cut to the chase. I don't know what this thing is, but we need to like find out. We need to find out more. And he was sort of presenting the idea of it being a hemangioma, but like kind of under this, like caught under the skin still, or this other thing, which it ended up being, which is Langerhans cell histiocytosis, which I had never heard before and is an incredibly rare pediatric cancer. And it's kind of an offshoot of leukemia, and it has to do with a mutation of a white blood cell, a Langerhans cell, which is kind of like their watchdog for infections type of cell. And so we did more imaging, which I don't feel like I really like need to get into the details of, but I'll just say this, that doing MRIs and these kinds of imaging with an infant is like or a newborn, like she was just like seven, eight weeks old when all this was unfolding, is like really difficult. And you have to make, we had to make some really like intense decisions around sedation and anesthesia and radiation exposure. And so we did an MRI shortly after the ultrasound that confirmed that this was malignant. And very quickly, like the next day, we were meeting with the one pediatric neurosurgeon in Maine and the pediatric oncology team here. And my world was just flipped upside down. It was a very, really scary, scary time. And this particular disease, I guess essentially what happened was that a mutation occurred with the Langerhans cell, and it was not, she did not inherit it from us. It was just like a fluke. We just got really unlucky, in the words of her oncologist, that it mutated, the Langerhans cell mutated, and basically it ate a hole through her skull and left a tumor in place. And in my daughter's case, the hole went all the way through the skull. And so there was tumor all the way through, but it was unclear with the imaging if it was in the dura. And I only share that because there were a lot of tough conversations around a potential consequence of this disease, which has to do with neurodegeneration, and it comes into play with making decisions around chemotherapy treatment, which is extremely, extremely intense, you know, for an adult, let alone when you're a parent having to make these decisions for a child. And I never thought that I would be in this situation. And it is the world of pediatric oncology is its own special kind of hell. It is just a very intense place to be in. And my heart goes out for all of the parents who and families who are dealing with these cancers and diseases. So very quickly, we needed to biopsy the tumor, and the medical team was hesitant to remove the whole thing just because we hadn't confirmed that it was indeed LCH. And so we went, and I think she was 10 weeks old. I think she was 10 weeks old by the time we had the surgery. And that was really intense, though. I was handing, you know, we had to hand her away to an anesthesiologist and kind of just, you know, hope for the best with everything. And, you know, the surgery itself, my understanding was that it was pretty simple. But I met with the chaplain, the pediatric chaplain they had at the hospital, and she was absolutely amazing. While we were like recovering from, she was while Ellen was recovering from the surgery, so she just prayed for us, and I had talked to her. You know, I was just like, I feel so abandoned by God and all of this. I don't know why this is happening to me after I worked so hard to birth this baby, after this VBAC. You know, my world is just crumbling. And there's just such this beautiful moment of her. She was just like, can I pray for you guys? And the nurse was holding Elowen, and I was holding my husband's hand, and the chaplain was holding my other hand, and then the chaplain's other hand was on my daughter. And she just like talked to God, and she was just like, God, please remind Hannah and Colin that you have not left them, that they are not alone, and that mercy is coming for them. And it honestly was like, it was just like thunder crashed, and like the skies like parted, because shortly after that, we got two really huge miracles with Elowen's story. And the first miracle being that they did not find the cancer anywhere else in her body. We did some follow-up testing, some PET scan testing that showed that it was just in the one spot, which is highly unusual for an infant. Most of the time it's like affecting them systemically. And then the second miracle was that the surgery that she had actually started to cause the tumor to involute. So it just started to like recede on its own. So then we had a couple of months of going back and forth around making a decision around, do we treat this with chemotherapy drugs or not? And we actually went to Boston Children's, a hospital, to meet with their histiocytosis expert down there to get her opinion. This particular disease is extremely rare for an infant. The statistic is 1 in a million. And so her oncology team up here in Maine, they had seen like 50 or 60 cases. You know, he had treated 50 to 60 cases of LCH throughout his career. In Boston, that doctor down there had treated like a couple of hundred. Nobody had seen an infant with just one lesion, if you will, of the LCH. And so they wanted to make a kind of a group decision around treating or not treating. And if we don't treat, what do we do? So we made the decision. Her medical team recommended not treating with the chemotherapy, because I'm sure, as you can imagine, like for an infant, that's a really, again, like an extremely intense decision to make. Although if she had been sick with it, I think it would have been like pretty, it would have been easier for me to be like, yes, let's do it. But it would have come with a whole host of things, like having a port, and it's a year-long treatment. It's not a walk in the park. And so then we did like a year of basically follow-up imaging. And so the story really like wraps up with me actually on the day of her the last time we saw her oncologist, which was in December, right before she turned one. So just about that 1 year mark, I was getting ready to leave work, and my home birth midwives texted me, and they were reaching out because they recently had a client who's had given birth to a baby whose baby didn't have a cancer, but some sort of genetic issue that made them more predisposed to developing cancers. And they were just kind of like, we think you might really like her. Like, would you want to reach out to her? And so I reached out right away. And then, yeah, it just sort of like, I was like, oh my God, like this is coming full circle. Cause we then went to her oncology appointment that afternoon, and we got kind of the best news from her oncologist there, which was, don't come back for a year. Like if the disease is not presenting itself, like we don't need to do anything or see her for a year. And so it just got so much deeper, all the birth prep, all the birth work, it just got so, so deep. And here I was thinking that I would be talking to women about their VBACs and kind of supporting women through that arena. And yet I found myself on that day supporting a mom dealing, you know, with the shocking reality of entering this world that not many parents enter around having, you know, a child with an illness or a condition that's exceedingly rare. And it just felt like the story came full circle. So I'm just happy to share with everybody that my daughter, as of right now, is doing really, really well. We cannot predict the future with her illness, but we're doing great. And I thank God for every normal day that I have with her.
Oh, Hannah, wow. I just think that your story it's going to touch somebody. I think that's what I love so much about getting to have the podcast, is that it's a reach that we wouldn't possibly have on our own. And so like Paige and I know Paige is the one that read your story and invited you to come on. And we both just feel so grateful that you've shared your story with us and so touched by it, and know that there's someone out there listening that needed to hear the good words that you had to say. So I just want to say praise God for Ellowyn, and just like, wow, what a story is she. So thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.